Today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online is an encore presentation. We hope you enjoy the show.
Real Ghost Stories Online.
When you sign up to be an EPP, extra podcast person to Real Ghost Stories Online, you'll have access to the best ghost stories we've ever told.
The oven doors started slamming open and closed. And in places like this, oven doors take up entire walls.
Never before had I seen such clear evidence of something non-human being in a room with me.
Because it felt like somebody was here. You know, you see I did it written in paint where you just painted.
These are stories only EPP members have access to.
I don't know why, but I just wonder if that scream isn't a family member that was there to claim their loved one.
There was like something standing there right in the threshold of the doorway, and I was paralyzed. I couldn't breathe.
It's only $5 a month when you sign up at realghoststoriesonline.com by clicking Become an EPP.
There was an old lady standing at the foot of the bed, and she said she could see details and everything. You know, it just looked like an old lady standing at the foot of the bed.
You'll get access to the best ghost stories and exclusive video content we've ever created.
I have no doubt in my mind that it was completely supernatural.
But it felt like it was in my head. Like, it didn't feel like I was hearing it. It felt like it was in my head.
Become an EPP now and help keep our show on the air. At realghoststoriesonline.com, click Become an EPP.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That indeed it is, and on today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, we're going to talk to a man who not only has ghost stories to share, but he illustrates them as well in some very, very haunting ways. Adam Tillery is joining us today to talk about his book, Mischievous Ghost Stories and Illustrations. Takes us on a journey as a paranormal investigator and as an artist into his supernatural experiences at historic locations throughout his personal life, and shares those stories in word and in his art. And it's really kind of cool. He actually also created a drawing for us, a chalk interpretation of Jenny and myself. And he sent that to us along with the book. And it's now hanging up in our office. And it's a really cool, really cool picture. So, Adam, I want to thank you for that. Number one, welcome you to the show. Very excited to have you here on Real Ghost Stories Online.
Good. No problem at all. I love drawing, and I was happy to do it for you. You two make me laugh and scare me and do all sorts of other things for me throughout the workday.
It's not often you can have someone say that we make you laugh and scare you at the same time. It's like, oh, that's interesting. Your book here, it's all about supernatural experiences and historic locations throughout your personal life. I want to talk about some of those locations and the experiences that you've had in them, but let's go back a little bit further to begin with. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the first paranormal or supernatural experience that you can remember? How did this all begin for you?
Let's see. The earliest one I can remember, I refer to in my book, it's a story called Pipe Smoke. And there's little things that tie in along with the pipe smoke. Well, nobody in our household growing up smoked, mm-hmm. but there'd always be the aroma of like a sweet smoky smell yeah. in the house, most likely from a pipe. Well, the previous owner that used to live there used to smoke a pipe. And two of his favorite places that he'd like to smoke his pipe was downstairs in a coal room that we had. The coal room was sort of tore down. We tore down the extra wall, but you could still smell in that area. And that was where we actually put, once we renovated the basement and everything, put up drywall. That's where we had our computer. So I'd be, downstairs working on the computer on homework stuff. And sure enough, a nice, sweet-smelling smoke would drift across my nose. I'm thinking, man, nobody smoked any pipes or cigarettes in this house and
yeah.
long before I was born. And the other place would be upstairs in our front room at the front windows where he would like to look out, you know, across the yard out on the front street. And we can go stand by that window today, and I'm sure you still catch a whiff of his pipe smoke coming through.
Now, is that always supernatural, or is it just kind of embedded into the house? That's my question.
You know, I thought about that, but since then, some of the walls have been replaced, the carpet's mm-hmm. been torn up, and carpet's been put in new, and,
yeah.
you know, fresh paint's been put in over everywhere. So if it's seeping out of the house, I mean, it's seeping out pretty strong.
It's in there pretty good. It's an interesting thing. Recently, Jenny and me were at an antique store, and we were walking by... you know, one of the many booths, and there was that smell. I know that pipe smoke smell. My mom's dad smoked a pipe, you know, chronically, as I would say, not religiously, chronically. It was not healthy at all. And so it's embedded in your mind exactly what that smell is. And I just like, oh God, something in this booth was around somebody who smoked a pipe. And I thought nothing of it initially until we walked to the end of the aisle, turned around and came back. And that smell was completely gone. It would not disappear like that if it was in an object or a rug or whatever have you.
Right. It just like what you're describing there, that the smoke smell came and went, maybe just lasted a few seconds, and you could go try and grab somebody and say, hey, come here, let's see if you could smell the smoke in the house. And they'd say, no, nothing's there.
Did you know right away when you had that experience that was something paranormal?
I think at an early age, yes, I did, because the former owners passed away in 83, which was the year I was born. Mm-hmm. So I knew that it had to have been them. Because, well, again, nobody smoked in our house.
Sure.
Not even... my parents, nobody. But there are other events that tied in with it. You know, you could smell the pipe smoke, and then, you know, a few minutes later, you would hear maybe footsteps going down a long wooden hallway.
Mm-hmm.
I got a picture of that in the book as well. Or the creepiest thing was hearing the footsteps in the attic.
Mm-hmm.
But, for me to know it was paranormal, I picked up on it, and plus my parents would tell us little stories here and there about what they've experienced. They weren't afraid to tell us. Well, my dad was a little hesitant, but my mom, you know, she'd always, you know, gather around, boys, I got a story to tell you of what happened to me today.
So would you say that the house that you grew up in was a haunted house?
I would say so, yes.
What other experiences did you have there beyond the smoke?
Well, there's an experience that my mom definitely had, and this was when I was... on the way, this kind of refers to my grandpa Joe on my mom's side.
And what happened there?
Let's see. It was the night of his funeral. You know, I like I said, I was on the way. I was still in my mom's womb, and
mm-hmm.
she was holding my brother, my older brother, in his in her lap, and she was upstairs on the second floor, and it was midnight, or it was getting ready to turned midnight, you know, she's sad because it was her dad's funeral. And all of a sudden she looks out in the backyard next to the swing set and between the swing set and the oak tree. And she saw the same suit that my grandpa was buried in, a man standing there in the same suit.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew it was him. But right before she could get a good look, the clock had chimed midnight. So she looked at the clock, and by the time she looked back, he was gone. So what sort of adds to that story is that we felt like our grandpa even came by later to visit not only my older brother, but even my nephew some 20 years later.
How so? What happened there?
This is the one that still trips me out is, I was born by this time. My mom put me away in the crib, and she's carrying my older brother down the hallway, and you know, like you'd carry a baby, you know, or at least maybe like a 2-year-old or 3-year-old. He's, you know, mom's holding him, and his head's facing the other direction behind mom. And as she's carrying him down the hallway, he sort of recoils and says, "Man, Well, at the time, this was late at night, my dad is already in bed upstairs, and my oldest brother has already been way asleep, maybe an hour ago or so. So for him to, my mom turned around, looked, and there was nobody in the hallway. There was no man there in the hallway. She knew everybody was asleep, even my dad upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
So for my brother to say that there was a man in the hallway, that was creepy. That was one of the stories my mom told us growing up. And then, you know, we're like, all right, you know, that could have been just Alec. Imagine, my brother's name is Alec, and that could have been Alec just imagining something. But what added credibility to it was 20-some years later, my nephew, Caleb, you know, he's about the same age my brother was at the time, you know, about 3 or 4 or so. And my mom's in the front room playing with him on the floor and everything. And, you know, he stops what he's playing with and all of a sudden perks up and looks over my mom back towards our dining room area. And he points and says, "Ma'am." And my mom's like, "Oh no, not again." So
mm-hmm.
for 2 different instances for my brother and my nephew to both stop what they're doing and point and say, "Ma'am," is just, we felt like that was just our grandpa coming by, kind of like how he came by on the night of his funeral to, you know, maybe say goodbye,
mm-hmm.
or maybe, you know, he came back to say hello or just visit with his kids or his grandchildren.
Do you think he was someone who was always there, who was always almost like a resident of the home as a ghost, or do you view him more so as kind of like almost what you were saying there, visiting, coming back every now and then just to check in?
I would say visiting, definitely more leaning on the side of visiting.
Okay.
I feel like the former owners were there. I mean, they're hanging around because they loved the house. And,
sure.
You know, I'll tell you this first off. I mean, they weren't malicious or anything. Any sort of encounter that we had in the house, whether it be from, a light turning on by itself or, you know, footsteps in the attic or upstairs, that was the spookiest it got. I mean, there was never any, you know, bad vibes in the house or anything.
Sure. It's interesting we were talking about, your brother, you know, experiencing that and your cousin and pointing and saying, "Man," do you believe that children are a little more open to seeing these things than say, you know, an older child or an adult?
I think so. I think so. Because I think whether we want to learn stuff or not at an early age, there is so much information being sent to a child that I feel like if ghosts exist, I feel like that information that whatever, you know, however a ghost manifests can be much more easy for a ghost to project information to a child rather than an adult who's, you know, hasn't built up the resistance to disbelieving in such things.
Sure. I understand. And also, you know, sometimes too, just their mind being so many other places, I think sometimes a child's mind, as scatterbrained as children can be, if you can hold their attention, they're on to you. They are paying attention
right.
to what is at hand, whereas adults, it's very easy for us to almost appear that we're paying attention to something when our mind is, 10 other places at once.
It's almost like,
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, it's almost like, you know, how they say, you know, like when you want to try something new, go into an open mind with it. You know,
sure.
You know, have an open mind when you try something new. Well, mm-hmm. I think as a child, your mind is naturally open.
Sure.
And, you know, it's much, it's like you can almost, you don't even have to try to have a ghostly encounter.
I agree. You say in the book that you've never seen a ghost with your own eyes. So how exactly do you feel them? How do you sense them? How do they come to you?
You know, I could definitely hear them. You know, I could feel them nearby. And that actually started really amplifying when after a few investigations, which, you know, people talk about the dangers of paranormal investigating. Well, I think I made myself a victim of it for sure.
Oh, how so?
It was, I don't even know why I do it to this day, or why I did it to this day. Missouri State Penitentiary. We were the first team to go in and to investigate it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at this time, you know, this is, you know, we've investigated a few places. I knew what I was doing, you know, here and there. And, you know, I'm just like, I'm trying to get a reaction, not by provoking, but, you know, by interacting with as much physical objects as possible or, you know, asking as many questions as possible. So when the opportunity to go investigate the gas chamber was presented to us, I'm like, oh, this should be great. You know, there should be activity in there for sure.
Yeah.
You know, when I should have started really thinking about how serious of a place that really is. So when we went there and investigated, you know, it was me and a few other guys there, my brother and my other teammate and another team as well. We went to the gas chamber, you know, the door, you know, rusty door creaked open, and sure enough, there's two chairs right there where 40 people were executed by gas. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, well, let's see if we can get a reaction inside here. I bet there's something holding on inside this gas chamber. So I, you know, I just thought, I thought nothing of it. I'm going to have a seat here in this chair.
Mm-hmm.
And when I did that, you know, that's almost kind of going in with an open mind. I'm like, oh, nothing's going to happen. I'm going to go sit back and relax. And shortly after I sat down in the main chair, I was overcome with this. I was very skeptical at first about, you know, people, you know, getting sick or feeling, you know, slightly possessed. But after this experience, I definitely can relate to those people who have had those experiences, because the most ultimate feeling of dread and disgust came over me. And I, to this day, I can't shake it. And whenever I go and investigate, I'm going in a lot more humble and a lot more hesitant than I used to be after that experience. But since that experience, I can sense when, you know, there's a certain vibe in a room, or you know, my hearing is a little more in tune with unnatural noises from, like, you know, your typical house creaking, or, you know, just foundation settling or whatever.
Mm-hmm. It's like all the senses you've experienced the undead with them, except for sight. That's the one thing that you have yet to experience as far as seeing the actual ghost. When you were sitting there in that chair and you were overcome with those feelings, what do you think it was that was going on at that moment? Do you feel it was just, you know, an empathetic type experience where you were just in an area where, you know, as if you were at a funeral, you would, you know, you almost feel sad, even if it was a complete stranger. You don't know who the person is, but there's just that sense of sadness that surrounds you, and you can naturally begin to feel sad for the situation and all the people grieving. Or was it more of a something using your body as a conduit to express the feelings that one had who had actually been sitting there at one point in time?
I think the second part right there is exactly what I was feeling.
Yeah.
The first words that come to mind when you ask me was, this is the end. This is it. This is where I go.
Okay.
That's the feeling that I felt.
Yeah.
As if you knew you're about to die.
Mm-hmm.
That was the feeling that overcame me. It wasn't, you know, sadness was there, but it was definitely overpowered by the feeling of dread.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the end.
You know, you may have just answered it, but I wanted to ask you, what has been the most frightening moment you've ever had on a ghost hunt or in your investigations? Was that it right there?
I would say so. You know, as far as, like, you know, yeah, I would say so, because it's lasted with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it hasn't really gone away. I mean, I can think back to sitting there in that chair, and I can still feel those feelings in my head. I still remember what I felt, you know. It doesn't, you know, I build up a little tolerance to it now, but, you know, it's just like, you know, if I ever need to know what it's like to feel like the end's coming, you know, I got a pretty good taste of it.
You have a reference point that you almost would rather not have a reference point
right to.
Now, obviously, you know, we have a lot of stories here on the show that are very frightening, very scary, and that obviously sounds like one of them it would have been.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have stories that are positive, fulfilling experiences from ghost hunters or people who, you know, without choice had some sort of interaction with a spirit. Do you have any stories or any experiences like that where you walked away from a ghost investigation or a ghost hunt and felt very fulfilled? Like, you know, we did something, you know, really meaningful here today, not only just, you know, for if it's involving, you know, the dead or helping someone crossover or something of that nature, but the living and making some sort of a difference by connecting somewhere.
I think I did. The first thing that comes to mind is the Rice Tremonti House. It's a famous stopping point on the Santa Fe Trail here in the greater Kansas City area.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like, you know, it was a really old house, and it's still there today. We still visit it whenever they have their fall soups and crafts days, or even their spring crafts and soups days. Really good soups, by the way.
Okay.
And and we'll go there, or when we investigated it, you know, we went into it thinking, oh, this is going to be spooky. You know, a lot of people have passed through these fields on their way across the nation.
Sure.
And we went there, you know, we didn't pick up on that vibe. You know, it was more of, you know, that this is nice. They're kind of, we're picking up on, you know, that they're glad we're here. And again, we all, my team and I, we always go in, you know, we're not badasses or anything. You know, we always introduce ourselves and say, how's everybody doing? If you'd like to share your story with us, feel free to come over and speak into my voice recorder, or if you have something to say. You know, we always do it in a very nice way. And, you know, after we do our usual spiel for investigating, you know, as we settle into the night, we started getting some responses on our voice recorder. And two definite responses was the sound of a little girl responding to us. For one instance, we were getting ready to play some music as sort of like a trigger object, and it was pioneer music, you know, Camp Town Races or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we were getting ready to play that, and it almost sounds like you can hear a girl's voice, you know, trying to speak to us. It's a very high-pitched voice. We're all standing still. We're all in the same area, and you can hear this high-pitched voice come off in the distance.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know what it said, but what we felt like it was, what was a little girl, you know, getting excited for the music that we're about to play.
Mm-hmm.
So we played it. Investigation had a few other strange things happen here and there, and I can tell you that too, because this is there was one scary thing that happened, but it happened outside of the house.
Okay.
But before I get to that, we're closing out for the night, getting ready, and I left my voice recorder running, and you can clearly hear the same girl's voice say, "Come back." So after capturing that, we definitely felt like our feelings coincided that the evidence coincided with what we were feeling that night. It was inside the house, it's very nice, and, you know, the ghosts that were in there were happy to have us.
Mm-hmm. You were their guests. So what was the scary point of the evening?
Oh, and we even caught this on film. We caught our reaction on film. Again, we're taking a break, and, you know, whenever I take a break, I always make sure to leave a voice recorder running or a camera running. And, you know, I leave my camcorder running towards the back door, and you see my brother coming in the view. You know, he's moving equipment around. But you very clearly hear somebody knock three times on the back door. And Alex stops and looks at the back door, and then you can see my brother's eyes follow a figure outside the window. So you're watching him look out the window, and he's like, somebody knocked on the back door.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the scariest thing is how he described it. He said it looked like somebody with a potato sack on their head. That's pretty spooky. And we went outside. Our other teammates stayed inside to make sure the house would be secure. But my brother and I went outside, and we secured the perimeter, and yeah, nobody was in sight. We checked the, you know, several yards away from the house. Nobody was hiding in the woods or anything. It just, like, this figure just vanished after it took a few steps away. But to capture that, I mean, it's just that was the scariest thing that night at that house.
He was there and he was gone.
Right. Now,
something that we don't really talk about a whole lot on this show is necessarily the practice of paranormal investigation. And I know we have a lot of listeners who are very curious about it. We're not so much, you know, a technical-esque show on a lot of these things. So without mm-hmm. getting, you know, super technical on, you know, investigations and ghost, you know, hunts, if you will, I thought it'd be interesting, though, to talk with someone who does this, who goes out there and does investigate, about some of the correct practices, if you will, for engaging with the spirit on an investigation. Because we've had so many I've had interviews on this show where I've talked to people and they're telling me how they were trying to interact with a ghost. And I'm like, I don't think that that's probably the best idea of what you were trying to do. And some are right on, and it seems, okay, this is fairly respectful. But, you know, like I said, without getting into super technical aspects or equipment or anything like that, just what are, you know, some of the, you know, the top five correct practices, if you will, for the listeners out there who inevitably will make their own ghost investigations out of curiosity or go on their own ghost investigations for interacting with a spirit? What are the right ways of going about it if you're trying to interact with something that's out there?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is actually not really necessarily about the ghost itself, but about the location you go to and investigate, or okay. even, you know, if you do go to an investigation, you always want to get permission first and always, you know, want to, you know, donate to, like, say again, like the Rush Mining House I went to. We always leave a donation, even though they don't ask for money to investigate. You
sure.
leave a donation. You always ask permission to investigate. And once you're inside, you know, one of the first things that comes to mind is be nice. There's not all places are evil, kind of like what you were talking about earlier, you know. Mm-hmm. Not all places are going to have demons in. Not all places are going to have bad spirits. So, you know, it's a good practice to start off nice. And if negative things start happening to you, well, that's when you can sort of back off and, you know, maybe bring in the right kind of people to deal with those negative things that are occurring.
Mm-hmm.
And then as far as, like, you know, investigating techniques, some of the more simpler ones are you know, always bring a voice recorder. Voice recorder is very universal when paranormal investigating. It can capture audio evidence, and you're able to sort out, you know, what you're able to replay it, and you can actually say, you know, instead of actually being there and saying, did you hear that? You know, I think that was so and such. Well, you actually have a recording to, you know, to root out whether it's your friend saying something. You can go over it.
Mm-hmm.
And always bring a flashlight. Very important. Very important to bring a flashlight. There have been a couple of times where we've done public investigations, and, you know, we quickly ran out of flashlights. And, you know, we had a lot of people clinging to us as we investigated long hauls and big places. But those are definitely some of my tops right there for paranormal investigating. Ask permission, be nice, and, you know, bring the standard paranormal investigating equipment, such as a flashlight and voice recorder.
I would imagine almost, I mean, a cell phone these days would be sufficient for a voice recorder, as long as it's a smartphone that has a recording app on it. Would that be accurate?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be fine. Yeah.
Sure. How often do you go through batteries?
Oh, I'll have to send you a picture later. Between my brother and I, we have quite the arsenal of batteries on hand each time we go investigating.
There's just no explanation for that. I mean, people are always, you know, looking for the evidence of something paranormal, more so like in the EVP or the something caught on tape or smell or this or that. Wouldn't you say some of the most simplistic evidence almost always out there is, how the hell did these fresh batteries go dead within 15 minutes or something of that nature?
Right. It almost defies our physics on this plane of existence.
Yeah.
It's the best way I can come up with it.
It seems like a very simple, there's something odd going on here with the fact that this is happening consistently on investigations. Let me ask you this, because we just talked about, you know, the correct practices about things you should do. Being someone who has some experience in the world of this, what would you say are, you know, maybe the top five things you should never do on a ghost investigation that you've seen or heard done?
Oh, well, yeah, kind of almost mirror images, my top things to do. It's no trespassing.
Sure.
Trespassing is bad.
Mm-hmm.
And next, you know, you can go into a paranormal investigating mad and, you know, expecting there to be some sort of bad demon around the corner. But you don't want to provoke. You don't want to provoke unless you know how to get yourself out of that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And most genuinely, a lot of, you know, even some of the amateur to pro paranormal investigators out there, I guess you could say, don't know how to rid themselves of a bad clinging spirit, i.e. myself, for sitting in a gas chamber chair.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
so
we,
I,
When you see things like that, like especially like on some of the ghost TV shows that are out there that use the word bro far too frequently, I have to wonder, you know, there's a lot of provoking that goes on, and I understand how TV is produced. I've been part of it. I know how that works. But at the same point, some of it's like, yeah, this is probably not the best of ideas.
Definitely not. When I see those TV shows and they do provoking like that, you know, like I said, it is for TV. But, you know, in a strange way, you probably will get a reaction if you try to, try to piss off a bad ghost. You know, you will, you know, it's just like any, for me, it's like ghosts are much like real living people. You know, you got good people and you got bad people. You got hotheads and you got people with ice water in their veins.
Mm-hmm.
And some ghosts are the same. I mean, some ghosts, you know, may have been just a real hothead in life. And, you know, if you start, you know, poking that bear, they're going to poke back.
Sure.
So, I mean, but, you know, like I said, if you're going to do provoking, you better know how to back out of it if it gets too heavy for you.
Well, and sometimes you may not even know, you know, even if you have an idea how to back out, how you really can back out of it, especially if you're dealing with something that you can't see or hear. You don't know if that thing is going to follow you wherever you may end up going because they're so angry. I mean, it's you're right. It's very much like dealing with a living person. If you go up to a living person and you start provoking or taunting or reminding them of the horrible things that happened in their life, and then expect that living person just to sit there and be like, I'm just going to sit up here in the corner and do whatever. You know, you could anger an individual, a living individual, to be so upset that they're going to follow you home and want to know, why are you doing this to me? I would expect the same oftentimes of the dead. And it's funny how sometimes we just kind of dismiss that and go, oh, why did it follow me? Look what you were doing.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. That's why whenever my team and I go out investigating, we always, you know, like I said, we're nice. And, you know, if one of us happens to get a little heated, we always make sure to apologize for making you upset. If we did accidentally make you upset, apologize. You know, just, you know, talk to them just like what we're talking about. Talk to them like they're a real person still.
Sure. What makes someone or someone, let's say, you know, a human-esque ghost or something that was human, what makes them come back to haunt a location? I know it's a very open-ended question, but what's your thoughts?
First thing that comes to mind is emotional attachment to something. You know, you have haunted objects, you know, and a house could be an object. People just may have really, you know, loved the house that they grew up in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they passed away, whether tragically or gradually, you know, and they may have not crossed over. Well, they want to go back to a place that was comfortable to them. And that house may still be a comfort place for them, a safe haven. Or that object may remind them of good times. That's what I feel like will keep, a ghost earthbound.
You think they're there by choice?
I think the ones that may have passed away gradually and knew their end was coming are there by choice, but the ones who died tragically and abruptly, they don't know that they're there by choice.
Do you think that they always realize that they're dead?
I think, I think that's what paranormal investigating can do is that, you know, obviously I'm sure you've heard a few of, bits of evidence where a person can ask a question and they get a very clear response. So I'm sure there is a way to communicate to ghosts that if they don't know they're dead, you can tell them they're dead.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe it's almost like a Groundhog's Day for a ghost too, you know, a residual energy you could tell them one day, but then the next day or the next series of 24 hours, they just totally go back to forgetting what they just talked about the previous night or previous investigation.
Have you ever run into a case where the entity, whatever it may be, whether it be a human spirit or something else, where it was a danger to the living where it was at?
Let's see. Danger to the living? Missouri State Pen.
Sure.
That's one of the first things that come to mind. And believe me, we've done it. We've done several investigations across there, but you know, not all places are haunted. But Missouri State Penitentiary definitely has some darker history there, where they can, you know, cause harm to the living. But let's see, an example other than Missouri State Pen. I mean, as far as my experience and my teammates' experience, we've never had anything too harmful as far as like scratching happened to us.
How about something where it's been almost a help to the living where they're at?
I'd say, help to a living. You know, one place that comes to mind is the Belvoir Winery up in Liberty, Missouri. This used to be a nursing home, an orphanage, and it's been there for over, you know, the buildings are still there, and they've been there for 100-some years now. And I feel like, you know, maybe people who were still residing there up until the 80s may have had some encounters, but they were from previous residents who knew what they were going through, previous residents who are now spirits. And they may have found, you know, a nice time, you know, interacting with the living or the dead, vice versa, whoever's, you know, seeing each other, you know, because they can relate to one another. So I'd say places like that that you may be able to find an instance where where ghosts are helping the living still.
Okay.
Keeping company, I guess you could say.
I could see that, yeah. Almost like they're there to visit, if you will. A pleasant little visit. I want to talk a little bit about the drawings that you do with this book that you have here, Mischievous, the Ghost Stories and Illustrations. Let's talk about the illustrations a little bit. How did this all begin with you and the illustrations that you create in regards to the paranormal?
The very first one I did... and this kind of goes back to not being able to see ghosts, but feel ghosts and sort of sense them around me. Born and raised Kansas City, Kansas, and one of the house I live in now, actually the neighborhood roughly where I live, was a reserve, you know, for I think Delaware Indians around the mid-1850s, 60s or so. And I even found an arrowhead back there. Well, one day, you know, I'm just kind of, you know, hanging out in the backyard. It's a nice little wooded area. And I get this vision of this Native American just popping up in my head. He doesn't look menacing. You know, he has beads around his neck, and he's just looking at me, and he has a smile on my face. Again, he has a smile on his face. Mm-hmm. And again, this is just all happening in my head. I'm just kicking back, relaxing. I think I had maybe a bonfire going, too. That was like the first vision I had that wouldn't leave my head. So I'm like, you know what? I want to explain to people what I'm seeing, so I decided to draw it down, or draw his image onto paper. And that's where the original idea came from. It was like, well, if I'm able to see these spirits in my head, you know, whether it be, you know, them actually projecting themselves into my mind or just my imagination running wild with it, I'm going to draw it regardless and, you know, just get it out of my head and let other people sort of see what I'm seeing.
Sure.
And that's pretty much the origin of how... my book started, is where I draw a picture and write a story with it. Well, that's when I started saying, well, why don't I start drawing pictures to go along with the actual experiences that I have? So, and that's what the book is. It's a mixture of illustrations to go with my personal experiences and illustrations to go with the spooky stories that are just conjured up in my brain.
Are all the stories in the book, are these all experiences that happened to you, or will you say some are conjured up in your brain, or some just ghost stories, if you will, meaning it's a story, not a true experience?
Yeah. I'd say at least half the book are just stories that kind of almost doing my Stephen King impersonation in the book here.
Okay.
You know, just coming up, going to haunted locations and being inspired by the setting that I go to.
Sure.
Pretty much how those stories get started, but the other half are, you know, personal encounters that I've had throughout my life.
I love the illustrations. They're very good. There's some are just very, I like the dark ones, of course, because that's kind of what I gravitate towards.
Yeah.
You know, kind of there's one in here, and I'm paging through the book right now of, what is it, page 81, From My Haunted Mind. It's the older woman like pointing at the what would be the camera if it were a camera shot.
Oh, yeah. The in the corner or something,
yes.
I think I titled it.
Yes.
Yeah, that was actually one of my earliest stories that I just had fun with. I just was thinking I'd visit like an old funeral home,
uh-huh.
you know, like when it was actually a house.
Sure.
I'm thinking, oh, this would be, you know, a good setting to, you know, tell a story. And, you know, that the vision of that woman, the creepy old woman pointing at you came in my head. I'm like, all right, I'm going to draw her. And I'm going to write a story around her.
Do you consider yourself sensitive, like empathic, if you will, almost? That I'm wondering if some of these things where you're telling a story, you know, that's coming to you, or you know, as some would say, you're kind of making it up as you go, telling a story like a Stephen King type style. Do you wonder sometimes, though, if are you sensitive enough where maybe there is something to some of these stories that you're coming up with and you're not even aware of it?
You know, I've often thought that while writing the book. You know, I'm thinking, all right, which one of these are real and which ones are just, you know, me staying up way past midnight and drinking Dr. Pepper and, you know, which one of these ghosts are just fueled by Dr. Pepper and which ones are actually standing right behind me?
Eventually, you'll be listening to an episode of our show someday, and there'll be someone saying, and I was at this one place, and it'll be a place that you recognize or that you were inspired by, and they'll end up telling mm-hmm. your story, but it will be their story for what actually happened to them, and somehow you were able to translate this without knowing any of it.
Right.
It's funny.
I'll be like, oh, great, they were right there the whole time when I was writing this story.
Exactly,
great.
Yeah, and somehow you just picked up on it. But very great illustrations, really interesting book. I do highly recommend it. Of course, we'll put a link up on the website at Real Ghost Stories Online. Adam Tillery, the book Mischievous Ghost Stories and Illustrations. I love the illustrations, and he did an illustration of us. And I'll put that picture up on the website, too, so people can clearly see it, not just for a flash second in a promo. So, Adam, thank you so much for talking with me this afternoon here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It was a real good time.
All right, there you go. Adam Tillery, if you want to check out his book, it's called Mischievous Ghost Stories and Illustrations. You can find that up there on Amazon. We'll also put a link up on our website at realghoststoriesonline.com. Very, very interesting book. And the drawings in it, if you like, you know, the art end of this and the interpretation of just creepiness, you gotta see some of his work. It's really good stuff. So again, thank you, Adam, for joining us today on the show. If you like our show, you want to help keep us on the air, become an EPP extra podcast person, you sign up for that on the website ghostpodcast.com. that's our EPP exclusive site. Go there, sign up, and help keep us afloat. It's only $5 a month, and it's just packed with absolutely amazing ghost stories and video content as well. So that's our little thank you to you, or big thank you to you for helping to keep this thing going, because there's lots of stories up there, more than 80-some odd episodes just ready for you to dive on into. Check it out, ghostpodcast.com. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thank you for listening to Real Ghost Stories Online.